Hello everyone, this is Janine Maxson. I am the General Counsel of CareNet, and it is my great pleasure to welcome you to another one of CareNet's webinars. Today's webinar is on preventing forced abortions, and we are very excited to have with us the team from the Justice Foundation, who are going to talk to you about a new program which they're instituting called the Center Against Forced Abortions, and some of the tools that they have developed to help you as a pregnancy center deal with the common issue that we have all seen, which is clients that we get into our centers that are being forced to have an abortion against their will. A few housekeeping matters before we proceed with the webinar. You should have a toolbar if you are logged in and hearing me. In that toolbar, you will see a place where it says questions. There's a place for you to type in questions. If you have any questions as the webinar proceeds forward, please do type those in. I will be, if there is an appropriate time to ask them during the course of the webinar, I'll certainly interject and ask questions then. But otherwise, we'll also leave time towards the end of the webinar to answer any questions that you might have. I also want to let you know that you should have links to different materials that are going to be referenced in today's webinar, specifically three documents called the client letter, the parent letter, and the abortionist letter. These letters were sent to you, the links to these letters were sent to you in your reminders for this webinar. They will also be sent to you in a follow-up email from us. But if you find that you've lost the links or if any time you need to access these letters, there's one of two things that you can do. You can go onto the Justice Foundation's website. They are up there. If you click on a link that says the Center Against Forced Abortions, you'll be able to find very clear, good links to those letters. Also, if you pop an email to the legal department, and our email address is legal, L-E-G-A-L, at care-net.org, we're happy to get you any materials that may have been referenced today for you to have to use within your center. If at any time after this webinar you have questions, you will get a lot of material, and you may have follow-up questions that you think about later on. You are free to email either the Justice Foundation or call them with any questions that you have. And as always, we welcome you to call up CareNet and talk with us at any time. I do want to give my kind of standard disclaimer. All the attorneys that you hear on today's webinar are not licensed to practice law in all 50 states. So what, you know, your best course of action if you have a specific situation is certainly call us, but a lot of times we may try to connect you with a local attorney. But I say that disclaimer in that anything you hear on today's webinar, you should use as educational material to help you set up your center in a way that can best help your clients, not as advice for any specific legal situation. With that, let me give you a few introductions. I do want to let you know, firstly, that this webinar, too, is being recorded by the Justice Foundation as well as by CareNet. If you have any questions that are sensitive or specific to your center that you wouldn't want the whole world knowing, I'll try my best to kind of make those as nonspecific as possible, but if they are specific and for that reason I don't ask them, you, again, can always follow up with us with questions at a later time. If you do want the recording, the website for where you can get that recording is listed on this slide, and that's also the website where you can find the links to these materials that we've referenced. And again, you can always email CareNet. That's the contact information for me, and the beautiful woman at the bottom of the screen is Melissa Macy, my paralegal, and many of you are familiar with her. Do please feel free to contact with her at any time. She's happy to help you. That is what we're here for. So let me tell you a little bit about the Justice Foundation. It was founded in 1993 to protect the fundamental freedoms and rights essential to the preservation of American society. It does represent clients free of charge in cases involving areas of limited government, free markets, private property, parental school choice, parental rights in education, and enforcing laws to protect women's health. They are a nonprofit public interest litigation firm that is supported by tax-deductible contributions, and they seek to protect fundamental freedoms through litigation and education. One of the speakers you'll hear today is my good friend, Alan Parker. Alan Parker is the president of the Justice Foundation. He has served as president since 1993 when it was founded. He is the lead legal counsel in the effort to overturn the landmark Supreme Court rulings that brought legalized abortion on demand to America, and is a frequent speaker on Roe versus Wade issues and the harm caused to women by abortion. Mr. Parker has been featured in numerous interviews and articles in national and international media, including the O'Reilly Factor, C-SPAN, BBC, and the Wall Street Journal, as well as Focus on the Family magazine. He is also the author of numerous works on parental school choice and a frequent lecturer on legal topics. He received his JD from the University of Texas School of Law and was an associate editor of the Texas Law Review, which is, by the way, a very good law review. The next speaker is Clayton Trotter. Clayton Trotter is the general counsel of the Justice Foundation. He is currently serving on the foundation's legal team to overturn Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, the companion cases that legalized abortion in America. Mr. Trotter served for 17 years as a law professor at Texas Tech University and was one of the founding professors of Regent University School of Law. Mr. Trotter is the author and co-author of numerous legal articles and publications and books. He is also one of the hosts and producer of the Justice Foundation's television program, Faces of Abortion, which is now seen in 125 countries. Mr. Trotter graduated with a JD degree from the University of Texas and attended Oxford University in England for 2 years of postdoctoral studies in international law and management. The Justice Foundation has also had joining with them Kathleen Cassidy Goodman, who is their legal counsel, and she is the lead counsel in the Center Against Forced Abortions. She co-founded the Texas Justice Foundation's Women, Health, and Protection Task Force and later became a full-time attorney with the Justice Foundation. She has had the honor of representing legal actions to seek to overturn Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. Currently, she is in private practice in civil litigation and, as I mentioned, is lead counsel for the Justice Foundation Center Against Forced Abortions. She graduated from St. Mary's University School of Law, where she published an article in the St. Mary's Law Journal discussing partial birth abortion. Additionally, she has published various magazine and newspaper articles regarding the harmful effects of abortion to women in our society. And finally, Sharon Stone is the executive director of the Pregnancy Care Center in San Antonio. Sharon Stone has a passion for the pro-life ministry for many years and has been working on the front line since 2004. She began as a volunteer counselor and was soon brought on staff at the Pregnancy Care Center of San Antonio. Now with 4 years behind her as an executive director, Sarah is more amazed at what the Lord can do in us and through us. She continues to share with everyone who will listen the profound importance of this ministry in our world. Sarah attended Texas Tech University, where she met her husband, Steve. They have been married for 34 years and have 2 grown children and 2 granddaughters. And I am very happy to say that most of the speakers today are from my home state of Texas. So just a little shout out to Texas there. But with that, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to the Justice Foundation to go ahead and take on the program.
Thank you very, very much, Janine. Thank you. Thank you. It's a great honor for all of us to be here today with you and with all of the pregnancy resource centers who are on the front line dealing with this issue of forced abortion and then just the other kinds of cases where women are struggling with the decision whether or not to abort their child. And that's one of the things we want to kind of reiterate in this case. Roe v. Wade is not a right to abortion case. It's the right whether or to decide whether or not to have an abortion. And I just want to give a little bit of background how we came involved into this case. We have another project that some of you may have heard of, Operation Outcry. It's a ministry of the Justice Foundation to mobilize men and women who've actually had abortions to tell the truth to the world and to the courts that abortion hurts women. And we now have about 5,000 legally admissible testimonies from women who've actually had abortions. And we refer those women to Christ-centered, biblically-based abortion recovery programs so they can get healing if they haven't already gone through it. But in talking with those women, we were shocked to learn how many times women are pressured or coerced or actually forced into having abortions. And the devastation that that causes is horrific. And so we knew about that. And then Sarah Stone, who's on the call with us today, is a executive director of a pregnancy resource center here in San Antonio, called us and had some actual situations. The girl says, my mother's forcing me to have an abortion. What do I do about it? And we actually worked on these situations a few times, and I went down to an abortion clinic once myself because the girl had been calling me and asking for help. And the legal point that I want you to remember from today's lesson is this. No one can legally force a woman to have an abortion against her will. No one can legally force a woman to have an abortion against her will. That's just existing law. We don't have to overturn Roe v. Wade to achieve these victories. These lessons we're giving you today and the documents we're giving you are built on existing law. It is what it is, and so you can use it today. If this afternoon or tomorrow morning, if you get that call from a girl who says, I don't want to have an abortion, but my parents are making me, you can say, no one can legally force you to have an abortion, not even your parents. And that's what we're going to kind of go over, but it kind of took us a while. In this girl's case, I remember I knew when she was going to have the clinic, when the abortion, and I went and I said, hello, and I'm going to make up a name, Sally, is that you? The third girl said, yes. And her mother was with her and said, what are you doing here? And I said, ma'am, I've heard from too many women who were forced by their parents to have abortions about the devastating effects. I don't want that to happen to your daughter or you. And she said, well, I think I ought to call the police. And the girl told me, she said, I don't want this abortion, but I can't fight my mother anymore. I don't want this abortion, but I can't fight my mother. That was enough for me to say, then, ma'am, I think I need to call the police because this is fetal homicide. It's not the girl wanting an abortion. And in what we're going to see today is in 37 states and really throughout the nation, it can be fetal homicide for anyone else to kill the child in the womb other than, unfortunately, the mother and the abortionist to whom she gives voluntary informed consent to perform the abortion. Unfortunately, that's the exception, which we don't think is morally correct and shouldn't be the law, but it is. But if she wants to keep the baby, then anybody else who kills that child in the womb is committing murder. So that's how we kind of got involved in it a little bit. And I'm going to turn it over now to Clayton Trotter, our general counsel, to talk to you about the first document we're going to look at today, the Dear Client Letter. And this is one that we're suggesting you give to everybody that comes into your clinic because you don't know when the girl is going to be pressured. She may be happy with the pregnancy test. She may be deciding she wants help, but she's not going to have abortion, and she may go home and face the whirlwind. So, Clayton, why don't you talk about the Dear Client Letter?
Okay, Alan. The Dear Client Letter is a letter that is addressed primarily to a minor girl who has just discovered she's pregnant. Now, the letter should be given to anyone, you know, even if they're not a minor, of course, with the understanding that it is primarily directed, or at least some of the paragraphs are directed to minor females. I don't want to read the letter to you. It's appearing on your screen. But basically, the first paragraph just says, look, you know, you've learned you're pregnant. You may have questions. This is one of the most important decisions you'll ever make in your life. Basically tells them, you know, that's the situation you're in. Then the next thing that says, we're going to help you. We want to help you. Particularly the sentence there, you're not alone. Oftentimes, of course, with our experience, a young woman does feel all alone. But we want to extend the fact that there's hope, that there are positive outcomes, and that there are organizations that will help us. And of course, one of the ways organizations can help is with legal rights, which sets up the next paragraph. The Justice Foundation, as well as your organization, has lawyers, volunteer lawyers, as well as lawyers on staff who are willing to help with the decision. And here at the Justice Foundation, actually, we have a project we're seeking to get the Supreme Court of Texas to make funds available to have lawyers available for young women who want to keep their children, their babies. You know, there's going to be a lot of advice out there for them. That next paragraph talks about that. To reiterate what Alan has already said, the next paragraph says it is unlawful for parents, relatives, or boyfriend to unduly pressure, force, or coerce you into having an abortion. And in bold letters there, no one can legally force you to have an abortion. Roe v. Wade states very clearly that it is a reproductive right that they are protecting. Now, they're protecting the right to reproduce, which includes, obviously, the right to bear children. Roe v. Wade is a two-edged sword in that respect. It protects a female if she desires to have the baby, and it's her decision and her decision alone. Now, sadly, it also legalizes fetal homicide, the way I look at it. It makes a legal exception to fetal homicide when the mother and the abortionist want to perform it. Now, what can be coercion? The letter goes on to give you a couple of examples. If you have this baby, I'm kicking you out of the house. Or you're my child, you have to do exactly what I tell you to do. Now, the general rule of law is that a child has to do what the parent tells them to. If it's a minor child, they're supposed to do what parents tell them to do. In fact, the law would require them to obey their parents. But this, again, is just a glaring exception to that. No, she has a constitutional right, no matter what her parents says, to have the child. Now, kicking her out of the house, again, if it is a minor child, the parent has a duty to support their minor child until their minor child reaches majority. So they can't kick her out of the house. At least they can't do it legally. And so she needs to understand and to be informed, and this letter does that, informs them that the parents are obligated to continue to support them. Now, a little bit later, a little further down on that paragraph, or on that page, it says that there's another paragraph talking about the financial support and assistance that the parents have to give to support the child. Now, that doesn't mean that they have to support their grandchild. The girl herself, who's pregnant, even though she's a minor, she has a legal duty and obligation to support her child once her child is born. Now, we've had good experience, as Alan has already said, with this letter because it helps girls understand, young women understand that they do have rights, that they cannot be coerced into having an abortion. And this has been utilized very effectively in a number of occasions, and I hope Kathleen, I believe, is going to be able to address some of those situations where we've used the letter. So, and Alan,
Thank you, Clayton. If anybody has questions about this, they can start typing them in to Janine, but we'll save the questions for the end that go over all the documents together. The last thing I want to say about this is designed to go on your letterhead. It's blank because this is the one you want to give to the young lady so that she knows where you are and can get back in contact with you and knows who it comes from, and this is your contact with them. So it's blank letterhead because we suggest you put your letterhead on it. Now, the next letter that we're going to talk about has the Justice Foundation letterhead on it, and this is the Dear Parent letter. And again, it's primarily designed for parents, but notice it does say parens or other concerned person. So the law is actually the same, that a boyfriend can't force a girl to have an abortion, an aunt or uncle or grandmother can't do it. We know the most common situation is probably the parents saying, you're too young to have an abortion, don't talk to me, I'm going to take you down there tomorrow, this is it, I'm making the decision. That's totally contrary to it being the girl's decision, and that's unconstitutional and improper. So this letter is on our letterhead, and it's designed to be given by you to every client, because you never know when they're going to have the problem. They may give it to a boyfriend, or they may take it home and give it to mom and dad. And that's where we've seen it used most effectively, And in the six times we know it's been used, we did a test for about a couple of months. It was used six times, and all six times it saved the baby's life. So this has been proven to be a very powerful and effective tool for letting the parents know their legal responsibilities and cooling down that anger that they sometimes feel and having them make the decision instead of the child. So let's go over this letter a little bit. If you're reading this letter, then you've been informed that your minor daughter is pregnant. See, we assume, and actually we've used this where the mother of the boy, just this week. Oh, well, I'm sorry, Kathleen's going to give you some of the examples about it, but it can be used by anybody. These, we try to take a friendly tone and say there are many organizations and groups, including the Justice Foundation and the organization that gave your daughter this letter, are available to help you. That's why, you know, you need to let the girl know who you are, and you need to be available to the parents for counseling also. And there is hope. Positive, healthy outcomes can arise. There are important new legal rights that your minor daughter now possesses as a mother that you should know about. Your daughter is now the mother of a child in the womb. Just as you were her mother or father before she was born, she's a mother now regardless of the circumstances. As a mother, she has the fundamental right to direct the upbringing and education of her child. That right is hers, not anyone else's. Although you still have the legal duty to care for her, protect and provide for her, she has the right to make decisions about the child in the womb, your grandchild. And we want to use these positive terms that they may not be thinking in yet. You or any other person may not force, coerce, or pressure your daughter to have an abortion. To do so could subject you to the criminal charge of fetal homicide, parens killing a baby while still in the womb. In the many states with fetal homicide laws, there are actually about 37 states that have this, so it's true that in most states, this is the law. In other words, any third party, including a relative who causes the baby to be killed, may be guilty of fetal homicide. And we cite a Texas case that actually says that. It includes relatives. They do not have the right to kill this child in the womb. You may also be prosecuted under the Federal Unborn Victims of Violence Act. That's the law in every state. So no matter what state you're in, that law applies. That's known as the Lacey and Connor law. You remember the California woman who was killed by her husband while she was pregnant, and they got him for double murder because he killed two people. And he was the father of the child, and, you know, so he doesn't have that right. Only the mother of that child can have a voluntary informed abortion under current law. Force, excessive coercion, or duress may also subject you to reporting and prosecution for child abuse. Besides possible criminal prosecution, if you force, coerce, or exert undue pressure, then both you and the abortionist could be held liable for various civil torts, such as battery, negligence, false imprisonment, or other claims. So this is where the parents have to face their potential liability if they continue in a course of conduct saying, I don't care what you think, we're having an abortion. That's overpowering the daughter's will. And we put some common examples in here. You've probably heard these things. Clayton's already covered number one. If you have this baby, I'm kicking you out of the house. Number two is no more talking. I'm taking for you an abortion. I've made the appointment. Number three, you're my child. You'll do what I say. Again, that's normally true, but not in this case because of the Supreme Court's decision giving the right to the girl. If you're in a state with a judicial bypass law, you know that they can go to court and get an abortion without their parents even knowing about it. That law shows you it's the daughter's decision, not the parents. And number four, I'll beat you within an inch of your life. Any threat or infliction of violence is unlawful and could be would be child abuse, in my opinion. Not could be, if they actually inflict the physical force for doing something that is right and that the girl has a right to do, that's child abuse. And you're grounded, cut off, stranded, or any other punishment. You can't punish someone for doing something they have a right to do and that we all know is a morally correct thing to do. And so the attached resource list includes some organizations that may be able to assist you in many ways at this time of need. This depends on you coming up with local resources. You know, only you know what the name of the Catholic charity is or a government agency that provides WIC and child care and food and assistance. You all would want to list the maternity homes because if the parents are angry enough to be forcing an abortion, then that may very well be a situation where the best advice is to put the girl into a maternity home. And you can tell the parents, if you don't want to take care of this girl, there are many people that will, and you can fulfill your duty to care for the child by giving consent to place her in a maternity home. Then they're taking care of their child the way the law requires, but they don't have to have her in their home if they're angry and upset. And you all know those situations that you've dealt with many times. But give them the resources. So there's our three lawyers signing this document. And again, as Janine said at the beginning, these often you need legal advice specific for your state, and call Janine if you can get her quickly. But we've all agreed whoever you can get is who's going to give you the advice. Call us if you want to. And both we and Kathleen may also use the Alliance Defense Fund volunteer attorneys throughout the nation to help you if you don't have. And again, I suggest every pregnancy resource center ought to try to get a local attorney and you could give this letter to your local attorney, and they could make sure that it complies with state law. So we're available to help you and everything else. So that's the second letter, the Dear Parent letter. Now we're going to go into the third document. If you have questions about it, start writing them down and send them in, and Janine's going to ask them at the end. Right now we're going to go to the abortionist letter.
Now, of course, a letter to an abortionist is a letter that has a little bit more sensitivity associated with it because you are affecting the legal relationships between the abortionist and a young woman who might be abortion-minded. If you'll note this letter, I think if we can skim right down to the bottom of it, it has been prepared by Life Dynamics Incorporated out of Dallas, Texas. I would suggest that before you use this letter, you either contact your lawyers or the Justice Foundation lawyers or Life Dynamics to ensure that basically ensure the proper use of it. Going back up to the top, this is a letter to be signed by a young woman who is pregnant, who wants to keep her baby, to be sent to an abortionist facility or multiple abortion facilities, informing those facilities of her desire to keep her baby. And because of the coercion factor, sometimes a young woman who wants to keep her baby will be going into an abortion facility and will not be able to say she doesn't want to have the abortion because someone who's coercing her is there with her, in fact, in the very process of coercing her. So if you look at the first paragraph of that letter, it says, first of all, I'm pregnant. And then secondly, I've independently decided to continue my pregnancy to current term. But then says, however, other people are trying to coerce me into aborting this baby. So I'm giving you notice. If you look right there in the middle of the page, there I'm currently subjected to coercion. And then a little lower down it says, I'm giving you notice. The next line down, I'm hereby giving you notice. That's legal notice of the fact that she does not want to have an abortion. And it's in writing. So if someone brings her into the facility and they force her to have the abortion and the abortionist ignores this letter, it is setting them up for charges of child abuse, charges of criminal activity, as well as civil liability to the girl in a lawsuit for killing her baby against her wishes. And that's basically aggravated assault. I mean, there's all sorts of potential legal ramifications that are very, very negative for the abortionist if they go forward with an abortion under these circumstances. And those, of course, are listed there. Some of the things that the abortionist could be charged with are very, very serious. And, you know, and I like to say that what this does is it makes a girl radioactive. The abortionists just don't want to touch her once they receive a letter like this. Now, sometimes, and I guess go back to the bottom of the letter again here just a moment. This letter should go out to every abortion clinic or provider to which the complainant, i.e. the girl that wants to keep her baby, might be taken. It should be sent to all law enforcement agencies in that jurisdiction and any jurisdiction where she might be taken out of state, for example, to have an abortion. And then if it is a minor, it should also go to all Child Protective Service agencies so that Child Protective Service will be aware of what's going on, as well as out-of-state Child Protective Services that are close by. And, of course, legal counsel is the best person to be making these notifications and getting her to sign this letter, or a lawyer that is hired for her to represent her in this matter. This is a powerful letter, and it should be treated as a legal document that should have some legal attention. Now, sometimes a girl may change her mind. Obviously, girls do change their mind about whether they want to have an abortion or not have an abortion, and might write another letter saying, oh, I do want to have the abortion later on. But oftentimes that doesn't clear up the legal issues, because then you have one letter says I don't want abortion, one letter says I do. That creates a fact situation which might cause you have to have a hearing before a judge before an abortion can be performed. So anyway, it's a powerful, powerful letter. We commend it to you, and it's going to be on our website, but you really should have a lawyer involved with it if you use the letter. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Clayton. And again, the Dear Parent letter and the Dear Client letter, we suggest giving to every person. The abortionist letter would be used much more infrequently when the girl's physically in your office and she wants to sign it and she wants to notify the abortionist.
And if she notifies you that, and if she notifies you that she's being coerced. I mean,
Only in a coerced abortion situation. Our next speaker is Sarah Stone, who is the Executive Director of the San Antonio Pregnancy Center, a CareNet facility right here in San Antonio.
Hello. I'm mostly here today to just tell you these work. These forms, we've used them in our center for about a year now. They're highly effective. It really does empower the client when she feels powerless against her parents. I don't know if you read in the paper today, but there was a case in Ohio where a boyfriend actually took the girl to a clinic by gunpoint. Now, we don't quite see that so often, but we have actually had mafia in there that have tried to get the girls to abort because they're going to kill her. So those are some extreme cases. Usually it's the parents. They're afraid of their parents. And most of the time they have not even told their parents yet. That's why it's so important to send this letter home with every teenager. And we actually discussed at staff meeting yesterday, we're going to send it home with every client, even if a negative client, because she might know somebody or whatever. We just want these forms out there. We want these kids to know they have the power to carry that baby to term. We've had parents in the center where they've been telling the client advocate right there in the room that, no, this girl is going to have an abortion. So we've been able to pull this letter out, have the parent right there on the spot, read the letter, and you'd be surprised how it diffuses the situation. I think the parent, just like the child, thinks that they have the authority to make this girl do whatever she wants. When they read that letter, we've watched just kind of the air go out of their balloon. I haven't really had too many upset parents. Probably the most upset situation was when we used the forced abortion letter and sent it to the abortion clinics, and when the parent got there with their daughter, they were very upset because they couldn't go through with the scheduled abortion, and they called me all angry, wanted me to undo it. So that does happen, but I will tell you the abortion clinics do respect this letter. They are not going to risk doing something that's going to put them in jeopardy. I suggest to all directors that you do incorporate this into your training with all your client advocates. Make sure they really know that they're available, because it's very effective. We have quite a few teenagers in our clinic. I don't know about you, but we have the highest teen pregnancy rate in the nation, so we do see a lot of this, but I'm sure you all do. And let's see what else. I think that's about all I had for you guys today. I'll answer any questions at the end.
This is Kathleen Cassidy Goodman speaking. First of all, I'd like to thank each of you for the work that you do, because you're really the ones that are on the front lines of the battle. And frequently as attorneys, we're there after the abortion has occurred and have to pick up the pieces, but you're the ones that really have an incredible responsibility, and we really hope that these letters are tools that will help you in that battle. Just a little background on how we got where we are today. Basically, when I was working for the Justice Foundation, it's probably been about 10 years ago, we received a call from a 14-year-old girl whose mother was forcing her to have an abortion. It was down in Houston, and we're in San Antonio. We didn't know what to do. We had never had this situation previously, and from a legal perspective, I didn't know what we were going to do, but I decided to hop in my car and figure it out. So I drove down to Houston. On the way, I figured out who her pastor was, and I contacted him. He met me at the little gal's home, and we spoke with her for a while, and then when her mother showed up, we talked to her, and we tried to convince her not to have the abortion. It was very difficult. We had to present her with all the evidence that we had, that the Justice Foundation had, the affidavits from women saying how they were injured by abortion, and the mom was still pretty adamant, but eventually she finally gave in and allowed us to take her back to San Antonio, to Guadalupe Home and Maternity Home here, where she did eventually have the baby. But we didn't know from a legal perspective how we would approach this in the event that the parent did not, you know, eventually give in and allow the little gal to have the baby. So then recently we had another situation where a young girl's aunt contacted me, and she said that the father was forcing the girl to have an abortion. She lived with the dad, and the mom was in another state. The mom didn't want the girl to have the abortion, but the stepfather was adamant. And he had taken her to the abortion facility on the previous Saturday, and the girl cried so much that he finally had to leave and took her home. But he told her, he said, "I'm taking you back next week, and you're going to have that abortion." So I went to visit the girl, and she and I spoke for quite a while and discussed. She never once indicated to me that she was ever abortion-minded on that particular day. She wanted that baby, and she instructed me to do whatever it would take to save the life of her baby. When her dad showed up, I tried the same technique that I had tried previously, and he was adamant. He said, "You get out of my house. We're having that abortion." So based on the teenager's representations to me that she wanted to keep her baby, I decided I needed to go to court. What we did was we filed a declaratory judgment against the dad to declare that the young girl had the right to determine whether she wanted to have the abortion or not. And basically, under the law under Roe versus Wade, a woman has a right to make reproductive decisions. And it's our position that because she has this right, she can choose not only to have an abortion, but not to have an abortion. The judge issued an injunction, and that document had to be served on the father to tell the father he couldn't force the girl to have an abortion. All Friday afternoon, we were looking around trying to find him. We couldn't find him. We searched everywhere, and we couldn't find him. Eventually, we determined that we would have to serve him at the abortion facility on Saturday morning because we knew that's where he'd be. And the process server went into the abortion facility in the morning and served and stopped the girl from having the abortion. After the situation, we decided that we needed to do something in order to prevent this from happening in the future, because after this situation, we were told so frequently in our affidavits by women that they had been forced by either their mother, the boyfriend, just some individual had actually forced them to have an abortion. There was a tremendous amount of women that were being forced, so that's kind of what contributed to developing this forum. Before we haven't really distributed it on a mass level. We've given it to crisis pregnancy centers, mostly within Texas, a few around the country. And so since they have received this letter, we've had one particular situation of a crisis pregnancy center. They've called us and reported back, and that's something we'd like all of you to do, too, while I'm thinking of it. If you do have a situation where our letters work, if you'd let us know, we'd really appreciate that. But they called us back and to tell us the story about what had happened, that the girl came in with her stepfather, and the stepfather was forcing the girl to have an abortion. They pulled out this letter, and it's a legal letter. It's a very strong letter, and it's directed to the parent, and it informs the parent that he cannot force his daughter to have an abortion. Because of his behavior, the way he acted, and his comments, the crisis pregnancy center became suspicious, and eventually Child Protective Services became involved. And the girl did not have to have the abortion, and Child Protective Services intervened and prevented that girl from having the abortion. So it works in a lot of different ways. Another situation, the mother of the boy called us, and he was the boy that had fathered the child, and she informed us that the mother of the girl was forcing her to have an abortion. And it was a real violent, you know, kind of a domestic violence type situation. There was a lot of anger and fighting. Eventually, the girl ran away from home, and the police were involved. And when the police got involved and started talking to the girl, the police actually told her that her parents could force her to have an abortion. So it's not just you know, parents that are ignorant about the fact that the girl can't have an abortion, but it's the police that are ignorant. In the situation that I talked about earlier, I contacted Child Protective Services, and I reported it as child abuse, that the parent was trying to force the girl to have an abortion. They didn't think it was they thought that it was the parent's right to force the daughter to have the abortion. So, I mean, there's a lot of education that needs to go on out there. We need to inform first the crisis pregnancy centers. Some of the ladies and people that work in crisis pregnancy centers aren't aware. So you need to make sure all your employees realize that no one can force that girl to have an abortion against her will. And one other situation, too, that we encountered was where a school counselor had told the girl that her parents could force her to have an abortion. After she received our letter and looked at it and read it over, so now this school counselor no longer advises girls that the parents can force them to have an abortion. So I think that if you start using this letter, I think it needs to be given to every single teenager that comes into your facility, and even other women, too, because some of these adult women are being forced to have an abortion. So we hope these tools will help you to do the things that we need to save babies' lives. Ellen?
Thank you, Kathleen. And Kathleen is a courageous woman. She talks to a lot of the girls and the clinic, not the clinic workers, the Pregnancy Resource Center personnel who call in here from around the country. We want this to be helpful to you. The one thing I would reiterate that Kathleen said, for the parents of the teenage girl, the affidavits about what abortion does to women is often more persuasive than what it does to the child in the womb, because they don't feel any motherly feelings toward that child in the womb. They just care about their child. And we often say parents have the right to be mad. And we tell the young girl they may be mad at you, but they don't have the right to force you to have an abortion, and they'll get over being mad. And you all can help with that. The last thing is, Kathleen's talked about going to court. If you have a local lawyer, we can work with your lawyers on paperwork to go to court. Obviously, you wouldn't do that, but we're just here as a resource for you. And Janine, of course, has those as a resource for all of you all also. So, Janine, I'll just turn it over to you for questions and answers and anything else you want to say.
Yeah, and we've got some very excellent questions, Alan. There's a few I'll just hit first because they seem a little bit more apropos just to general CareNet practices. WinCenter did ask, if we're not a part of CareNet, can we still use these forms? One thing I'll just preface this with is, of course, we would love for all centers to be members of CareNet. One of the benefits you get among the many is you get our legal team, woohoo, and webinars like this on a monthly basis. But if for whatever reason, of course, you're not able to or willing to become a member of CareNet, we want every center to be able to use these letters. You can see the contact information for the Justice Foundation on that website. They also have up on my screen. They also have a website again where you can go and get these materials, and they would be willing and have been willing to work with any center directly. So if you're not an affiliate and not able to contact me for that reason, you can certainly go through the Justice Foundation or through whatever affiliate network that you are currently with. The other question that I wanted to hit, too, was someone had asked about the referral list to go on the back of the client letter and whether or not there needs to be a disclaimer waiving liability for the pregnancy center by making referrals. And I would just say to go by whatever your general practice is for making referrals. Of course, it is always very good to have a list of 3 referrals whenever possible, particularly when we're talking about things like physicians' offices or when we're talking about things like adoption agencies. Community referrals, I mean, typically you won't get 3 specifically if it's a government agency, and that's fine to include those. You may include a statement that just says these are not services of the center, these are provided by independent and separate organizations. But other than that, I don't see a huge need to have the client sign off on a waiver. I might see that need if you're referring her to a specific physician, but in that case, I think you're fine just going with your standard practices within your center. So let me throw a few of these over to the guys at the Justice Foundation. Alan, the first is, what if we do not have an attorney to help us out with the abortionist letter? What would you suggest in that instance?
All right. I would put in a plug for CareNet. Join CareNet, and Maxine's always available. You can call us. Life Dynamics, who does the abortionist letter, also has a network of volunteer attorneys across the country, and another group that has a network of volunteer attorneys across the country that I know works with CareNet and has offered this assistance to them is the Alliance Defense Fund. If you don't have a local attorney, call the Alliance Defense Fund at 1-800-TEL-ADF. 1-800-TEL-ADF, and ask if one of their volunteer attorneys would do some pro bono work for you. They've trained up a massive army of lawyers across the country who are supposed to do a service for the pro-life cause. So you might be able to get yourself a local lawyer through that contact as well.
Yeah, thank you for that plug, Alan. And we do have a program at CareNet where we work directly with ADF to try to get local attorneys, and they have said, particularly in situations like this where you have a client being forced to have an abortion, there's a lot of attorneys that would just love to help out and would be ready in an instance to do so. So,
I might just follow up with that. We may be calling you, Pregnancy Resource Centers. We got a call from a lady in Arkansas yesterday, the mother of the boy, and the girl was being pressured. I sent her the letter, but we use the option line or the national helpline for abortion recovery to find the crisis pregnancy center nearest to that person. And then we used ADF to find them a local attorney. So I know the next day we got contacted by both that they connected. So if we get the call just through the Center of Forced Abortion and it's somebody in Missouri, we will be using the CareNet, the option line to try to find you all and alert you to the problem.
That's great. And if I can just remind centers, I know sometimes, particularly if it's like a week where I'm at conference or I'm out of town, don't hesitate to call whoever you can get a hold of to help you with this, whether it's the Justice Foundation or CareNet. I would just call everyone until you get a hold of someone who can help you in these types of situations. Alan, the next question is, at what age are the parents no longer legally responsible for supporting the child?
Well, that would be called the age of majority. The general American rule is 18, but it varies from state to state. So to be able to say exactly in your state, you'd have to ask a local attorney, what's the age of majority? Most states have a provision called emancipation, where a girl younger than 18, say, can apply to a court, say, I'm ready to live on my own and I want to be emancipated. That would make her a legal adult. And then in some states, marriage with permission of the parents also emancipates her and makes her an adult.
Thank you, Alan.
You need to check your state law for the answer specifically.
I've actually gotten a few questions on this. Centers seem to be curious as to whether these letters can only be used for minors. What about clients who are 18 or over who may still be pressured by their parents or by a partner or someone else, perhaps?
Yes, we recommend any time that a pregnancy care center person thinks that someone's being forced to have an abortion, regardless of their age, they should be given that letter, because basically it tells them about, you know, child support and that the husband would or the boyfriend would be responsible for child support. So that's important to these women.
And let me say that we've just started this program this fall, and we've addressed the biggest issue first. But in the spring, we may be doing some training for guidance counselors, police, and child protective services. And then we probably need a letter specifically addressed to the father of the child, telling him that he can't
put his girlfriend in a car with a gun and take her to Planned Parenthood, as the newspaper said this gentleman in Columbus, Ohio did today. So we know it's a problem, but this letter, we put, or other concerned person, it does apply to the man.
Great. The next question is specifically on the abortionist letter. Is there a need to get that notarized when the client signs it?
This is Alan Parker again. No, your signature, her signature is enough. And you obviously want to keep a copy of this in your files, because when the girls are under so much pressure and just because of the situation itself, they may change their minds. But if you have a written document signed by the girl, then that's enough evidence clearly to protect you from any claim that you coerced her into doing it, or that the parent says, oh, you made her sign that. No, this is what she said. This was her feeling at the time. Maybe she changed it later and wanted an abortion of her own free will. But as Clayton said in his presentation, if you got one in writing saying I don't and another saying I do, in my opinion, that's enough to, and then later she says she is, you could call Child Protective Services or the courts and say, I'm not sure she's not being coerced. When she was here, she said she was being pressured. And really, an independent judiciary or someone who could take her inside and say, what's the real situation? We'll protect you if you're being pressured. You know, what is your real intent? That's ultimately what should be determined.
Now, it obviously, kind of speaking as a lawyer, it never hurts to have Notary Public sign something, you know, because what that does is it just authenticates the signature. That's the reason you have Notary Publics. You could even have somebody, you know, witness it at the bottom that, you know, that they saw her sign this, you know, of her own free will and so forth. It probably, I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't hurt, you know, but it's absolutely not necessary. I mean, it's just like, you know, any kind of letter, any other document someone signs, it's valid as a document for the purposes which it's intended to do. Some people just like to have everything notarized. You know, some lawyers say, oh, yeah, you got to notarize it. I don't think it's necessary. Wouldn't hurt, but it's not necessary.
I might also say that Mark Crutcher of Life Dynamics is going to be doing some training on this letter himself and putting together a video package in the spring. So you'll be getting some more information about that letter specifically to the abortionist.
And it's also, I might add, not really that hard, at least in most states, I think, to become a notary. So if there's someone in your center, if that's something that you wanted to do as an added protection, there's someone in your center, and there might be someone in your center who already is a notary. We have two at CareNet. That might be something to look into doing as well. And Alan had hit on one point, which I just kind of wanted to remind centers of. It is appropriate, too, in these situations, although you may not always get a good response, and a lot of times they're ignorant. And I think Kathleen gave an example about sometimes Child Protective Services is ignorant of this. But it is very appropriate for you in these situations to call Child Protective Services and report it as child abuse. I also, although I understand that clients are not always willing to kind of override the pressures their parents put on them, but advise centers to tell the clients, and this is part of what the client letter does, informs them of their rights, but also to make sure the clients are told to tell the abortionist that, you know, if they don't want the abortion, to make sure they are verbally telling the abortionist that, as well as having this letter as a tool. That doesn't always happen because sometimes they get overcome by fear and pressure, but at least advising them to do that, I think, is one good method to do as well. Alan, the next question is, for these letters, can we make them available at school health fairs or available to guidance counselors at middle schools and high schools?
We would love for you to do that. If you remember, we'd love to know that you're doing that. But yes, get them out as much as possible. Get them out in high school. If you do abstinence education programs, like a lot of centers do, pass them out to the teenage girls. We'd love for the girls in high schools to know their boyfriends can't push them into having an abortion, or the boy's parents can't. We have girls who are pressured by the boy's parents. Her parents never find out about it. They put her on her plane and sent her to Arkansas, out of state, to have an abortion. So, and she was terrified. So, you know, it should be known as widely as possible. And you can give it to the police or Child Protective Services, too. if you're reporting it as child abuse, I might include our letter to them, because mostly it's ignorance. That police officer, I think, just normally, his job out there is to tell children to do what their parents say. This is kind of an exception to that, and it's not very well known. And so, yeah, share it with anybody that you want, but routinely I wouldn't send it to the police or anything, but when needed and routinely to high school girls and abstinence programs, that would help.
Great. Alan, the next question is it okay for the center to fax the letter to the abortionist from the office after it's been signed?
Sarah Stone is saying that's what they do, and I think it's absolutely appropriate. And like I say, the problem is you're going to have the girl there to sign it. That's another reason you can't use it every time. We've often, you know, emailed or texted this dear parent letter to the girl, and she can just take it and use it. But if she's there and she signs it, and you have, I would say a witness is a good thing, because the girl's going to be under a lot of pressure. You know, she's telling you she's under pressure. So the next time she tells somebody, oh, no, I always want an abortion, you know, maybe they made me do it. Well, you've got a couple of adults and you've got it in writing. Nothing's going to happen to you in that situation, but it's good to have some evidence because it is a more high-risk situation because you are notifying people like the abortionist who obviously want to perform abortions.
And I think that's a good point, Alan. I mean, witnesses, you know, have some witnesses. Make sure that you're taking good notes at your center. But if you have a signature on there, and you can verify the signature with the client files that you've gotten. Every client should have signed her client intake form as well, so you can show that it's the same client. And all that helps to show that, you know, she did do it within her own will and that you were just trying to, help protect her to do her constitutional right to keep her child. The next question is, does this letter apply to husbands? Do these laws and letters apply to husbands who might be trying to force their wives into an abortion?
Absolutely. That's why the federal law is known as Lacey and Connors. It was the husband who killed the mother and the baby, and he was guilty of a double murder. So it is absolutely true. And then there's another decision, Casey versus Planned Parenthood, that said if the man... the man has no rights in this area. But I will say that if the woman wants an abortion, the man can't stop it. But one thing that is very interesting in this case, if the girl wants the child to be born, then the husband or boyfriend, whatever, just the natural father, has rights in that child. Because when the child is born, he will be the father. He has duties to pay child support, but he's also, if the girl doesn't want the child, you know, he could become the father and get custody of the child. So, and where you have a girl and a boy together who want to keep their child, then their legal interests are the same, and he has rights as a father, she has rights as a mother. But if she decides to get the abortion on his own, then he cannot stop that.
Okay. The next question is, Alan, do you know of any states where these letters would not apply or not be good to use, and if so, which states would those be?
No, particularly because of the federal law and because Roe v. Wade and all of these federal cases are federal cases, they are the law in every state of the union. There is no state or federal territory where this would not be appropriate to use.
Great. Next question on the abortionist letter again. Are you recommending that centers use their own letterhead for the abortionist letter?
No, I would use it exactly as it is. You don't... In fact, I would definitely say no. That is a notice from the girl to the abortionist. The clinic is only helping the girl give that notice. You notice it is from the girl. It is not from the client. So you would not put your center's director on there at all. It's not your notice. It is the girl's notice to the abortionist, and you're only helping her do what she wants to do in that case. So definitely do not put your letterhead on that.
The next question is just one I'll answer. Can these Q&As be made available for everyone on the webinar? I will have, I actually have this recorded, so what I can do is have my paralegal type those up, but I do want to remind everyone that a recording is going to be available on the Justice Foundation website, and I'll actually let Alan talk more about how they might be able to access that recording.
Right. If you go, give us a day or two to put it up, and we're going to be putting the recordings of this on thejusticefoundation.org. That's on our, it's underneath our letterhead on the Dear Parent letter that you should have. But the justicefoundation.org, it says right on the home page in the middle, Center Against Forced Abortion. Click on that, and the documents are there and tape recordings of this.
As I will say, in your client intake form, you should have a notice that says the instances in which you can breach confidentiality. One would be as required by law, and in many states this would fall under the legal permissions for you to breach confidentiality. But the other is in order to protect you from harm that others may be trying to impose on you, or harm that you might impose on yourself, such as suicide or homicide. And if you need to get that disclaimer, you can email us. I'll give you the exact disclaimer. But basically, if you have that disclaimer, you are giving notice to the client that says, look, if it is necessary to protect you from physical harm or abuse, then we will breach confidentiality and call Child Protective Services. And so by having that disclaimer, you do have the right to do that. You do not need to get her permission. I do, however, not, especially in instances when she's being forced into an abortion and she's wanting protection, I don't think it's a bad idea to let her know that you are going to call Child Protective Services and report this as abuse, and that you don't know how Child Protective Services will respond, but that you feel that you have both a moral obligation at the very least to try to protect her from this. The next question, Alan, is, do you have any plans to put this into a pamphlet, all this information into a pamphlet or any other educational tool?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that. We were at a meeting in Washington, and some of the sidewalk counseling groups want us to do a little pamphlet because they say they often see evidence of someone being dragged into the clinic or something, and would like to have that information for them. We hadn't thought about a pamphlet for crisis pregnancy centers. If y'all think that'd be a good idea, why don't you email us and let us know, and we'll think about it. I wouldn't say we have a plan for it, but Kathleen is a great writer, so that could happen. She is a fabulous author.
Great. The next question is for me. Will the letters be available on the CareNet website? We're very grateful that the Justice Foundation has given us permission to post those. They will be posted on our website. That's www.care-net.org. And if you go to the affiliates section of our website, you do need your password to get into that, and you'll have to call our national office to get a password if you don't have one. But when you get into that, you will see a button to press for legal resources. And if you press that button, we will have copies of all of these letters posted on our website that you will be able to download and print. And Alan, this next question, and I'm not really sure I'm completely understanding it, but maybe you will. Does the word kill constitute a tort under law?
Does the word kill? I'm not sure I understood. I mean, if you... No, it doesn't. To tell someone they're killing a child, that's not a tort. But is killing a child always... Normally, killing a child without a legal excuse is the tort of wrongful death. If you kill a child, the normal tort for that is called wrongful death. Now there can be exceptions or with a legal justification. If a doctor kills a child accidentally, it may not be a wrongful death. But if it's negligence or malpractice, then that's wrongful death that you sue him for. So I'm not sure if that's what they mean, but just telling someone you're killing a child would not be a tort.
And just a few comments people have put in, not questions. One is that this is not a question, just a big, and that's in capital letters, thank you for these very useful tools. What a great webinar. And then we've gotten a few people replying, please, please, please do a pamphlet. So again, I'd encourage you to maybe follow up with Alan and the folks at the Justice Foundation if you're interested in getting a pamphlet and working with him to give some ideas as to what that might look like to be good for clients. But even without a pamphlet, again, the letters are certainly useful tools that are available for you to use right now. Alan, is there anything you wanted to add before I close up the webinar?
That is what I was going to say. Just use these right now. Put your letterhead on the Dear Client letter. Keep a stack of our Dear Justice, Dear Parent letters around. And the letters really kind of explain the law. We are working on a set of instructions to go with them, and we'll email those out to all of the webinar participants, registrants, actually. And so we will get you those. And again, please do let us know if the letters save a baby. We'd really like to hear that. We have a little beautiful bronze bell here in our office that we ring every time we know a baby's life is saved, and we'd love to be ringing it a lot. And you all are on the front line. So anything we can do to help you, call us, you know, when you get in the situation. And I echo what Janine said. Call whoever you can get a hold of. We all agree with that, because it's usually pretty much a crisis situation. The girl says, they're taking me today, or, you know, you don't have a lot of time. And so get in touch with whichever lawyer you can find, and we all want to help you.
Well, there are no more questions. I just thank you so much to the team at the Justice Foundation and to everyone who listened in on this webinar. Please do stay tuned for next month's webinars. We will have a notice out as to what that will be, and it will be another wonderful webinar. But again, just a great big thanks to Justice Foundation for all that they have done, all that they did today, and what they're going to continue to do to help out our centers in this area, which I do not need to say to you is a tremendous need, as we all know. Again, if you have any questions, please do feel free to follow up with us or with the Justice Foundation. God bless you all, and have a wonderful day.